And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news and discussion. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. For complete coverage of IU basketball, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com. On this week's edition of Podcast on the Brink, Alex Bozich joins me, and we do a mailbag episode. We put out a call for questions on Twitter, inside of the Inside the Hall forum, and then on Facebook, and you all submitted a ton of good questions that we split up into three sections, some about Romeo, obviously, with the decision looming next Monday, and then questions about the team, guys that we think are going to make big jumps next year, and then also questions about Archie and his recruiting style, how it compares to Tom Crean. And an interesting discussion about Cliff Marshall as well. So we go through all of those questions, get into some pretty interesting discussions, and so we hope you like it and that you learn something here this week on Podcast on the Brink. Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, have had it for a couple of years now, and it is by far the easiest way that I have found to shop for tickets because I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I would love to use the SeatGeek app to pick up Mavericks playoff tickets this year and see Yogi, but obviously the Mavericks are not in the playoffs. But if you're in Indiana and you want to watch Victor, you want to watch Eric Gordon with Houston, or you want to watch OG with Toronto or any other NBA playoff games or any baseball games during the summer, SeatGeek is the way to go because SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals so that you don't have to go through all that legwork yourself. And best of all, listeners to Podcast on the Brink, like you, get $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K, today. That is promo code BRINK for $20 off of your first SeatGeek purchase. And we are back on Podcast on the Brink. I am here with Alex Bozich. Alex, this is the last episode of Podcast on the Brink before we finally know where Romeo Langford is going to school. I assume you are planning on being there Monday evening?
I will be there, along with a media contingent that I'm told could be over 100. So
Holy moly.
Should be quite an interesting evening. So looking forward to it.
Is this the biggest announcement like this in, I mean, I'm assuming it's the biggest announcement like this that you've covered. Is it the biggest in the history of Indiana high school athletes that you know of? Or even nationally? Like, is there another one that you can think of that will attract this much attention? Certainly locally. I don't know what the national attention will be, but from a local perspective, I mean,
there was a ton there for Zellers, but I feel like that wasn't open to the public. So this has a chance to be a little bit more, just a little different atmosphere, obviously. Zeller, there was a lot of media that one. I can remember having a hard time figuring out a spot to stand and try to film from. But this one, excuse me, is going to be just a little bit... have a little different feeling, just because of the buildup, how long it's gone and how long, Cody's, announcement. I think we learned about it a couple, maybe days, a week ahead of time. And this one we've known now for several weeks. And so there's been a little bit more buildup for it.
So for this week's episode, we're going to do a mailbag, and we got a bunch of questions from the Inside the Hall forum, from Twitter, and from Facebook, and really appreciate all of you who submitted questions. We won't be able to get to all of them, but we tried to pick some that are representative of the main topics that people want us to hit. And so we'll jump into that here in a minute, Alex. But before we do, just a couple quick questions about this. First, you published a piece, I believe it was Tuesday morning, a Q&A with Jim Shannon, Romeo's coach at New Albany. I certainly encourage everybody to read that. Go to insidethehole.com and you will find that. What was the biggest takeaway for you from that piece, from getting to talk with him about Romeo as the announcement nears?
Wow, that's a tough question. It's hard to narrow it down. It was such a long conversation. You know, I think when I transcribed it, it was something like 3,500 words. And I was like, wow, this is a lot. I think one of my favorite things that he said was, I was asking him about just like how, you know, if you're nitpicking to kind of critique his game, things he needs to get better at. And I don't know if it was that specific question, but at one point he compared him to like a black belt in karate and said, you know, he's already a black belt, but he can become a 10th degree black belt. You always kind of think about these elite players, and it's hard to pick apart their games and figure out things that they can improve on. But when you get to that level of player, it's a lot about the details. And I think he had some interesting insights on some small things that he thinks will maybe eventually help Romeo down the line as he tries to continue to hone his craft. But there was a ton of stuff. I mean, you know, I didn't even ask him anything about recruiting in the conversation because I didn't want to make it about that. I wanted to make it more about what it was like for him to coach Romeo for 4 years, what he meant to the community, and just what he's like as a person off the court. So it's a little bit of a longer read than stuff that we usually post, but carve out some time to check it out. I think it's got some terrific insight from Coach Shannon, who's been around Romeo as much as anybody.
I agree. Very, very worthwhile. Worth the time. So here's one more question that will transition us then into the first segment of the mailbag. Do you anticipate anything leaking or any, you know, kind of announcement being made about what Romeo will pick before Monday? Like, do you think that the suspense will be over before then? Or do you think that we'll enter Monday kind of how we are right now, where we've got these three finalists and everybody's hearing things, you know, here and there, but no one really knows for sure what he's going to do?
I think the only way it leaks is if he tells the other coaches of the schools that he's not going to, and they somehow leak it to a media member. Otherwise, I just don't see it happening. I mean, Cody Zellers didn't leak beforehand. The Garland one did, obviously. And I think that was maybe somewhat of a misunderstanding with how it was handled by ESPN and Paul Biancardi. I don't think they wanted that out there like that. And they went ahead and ran the story. You know, from my perspective, there's two ways to look at it. If you're a media member, one, if you've covered it closely, you can kind of take the stance of you want to be respectful of the family's wishes in the process. And even if you do know something, you just kind of wait and let the kid have his moment. And then there's the other, I think, more traditional approach that some may have that are more, I guess, journalism junkies, so to speak, that if you have information and you can report it, then you do. I would lean more towards hopefully people taking the first approach. You know, if the kid doesn't want it out there, then let him have his moment. That's kind of the camp I've always been in, and it'd be interesting to see. I don't think it's going to leak, but you never say never in a situation like this.
So here's a question from Matt Ewell, and Alex, you and I sent you some of these questions beforehand. You won't be surprised to find out that basically all the questions fell into three categories: Romeo questions, you know, questions about individual members of the team, and then questions about Archie, which and obviously some recruiting questions. So let's start with some of these Romeo questions. And this question from Matt Ewell: what do the tea leaves say about Romeo? And then if he doesn't, you know, if he does pick Indiana, how high do you think the ceiling is next year with him?
Well, the tea leaves, I don't, you know, the 24/7 crystal ball is kind of what everyone kind of tends to look at. I don't put a ton of stock in it. However, there are certain people on that crystal ball that make predictions that I do have a lot of respect for and confidence in. Some of them have made picks indicating that Romeo is going to IU. I'm not going to name names on that, obviously, because I don't want to play favorites or insinuate in any way that there's people on there who I don't trust. But there's a couple people on there that have picked IU. I think they have pretty good insight on just kind of where things stand nationally. But I will say that those things aren't foolproof. We saw with Zion Williamson, anything can happen. No one really thought he was going to Duke, and he went to Duke. But, you know, I would say at this point, this is just my opinion, that Indiana's in as good a shape as they've been in this recruitment, and it'll be interesting to kind of see how it ends up. Obviously, there's still time to go, and things can change, but I think they're in good shape. And as far as the ceiling goes, I would say the expectations for next season, if Romeo chooses IU, are going to increase dramatically. Some of them may be realistic, so others may be unrealistic. I do think it's realistic to think Indiana can finish in the top four of the Big Ten next season, maybe higher if they get Romeo Langford. I do think that there will be some chance that they could be a preseason top 25 team, if not right there on the cusp going into next season if they get Romeo. So those are just kind of some of the things that I'm looking at a higher level. Obviously, there's things to play out with the roster. You still got the Juwan Morgan decision outstanding. Do they go, and if they do get Romeo in the fold, do they go make a run at a grad transfer of some kind to fill out that final spot? But I would say in general, the expectations increase quite a bit if he does choose to come to Bloomington.
Yeah, the second part of that question is interesting. I mean, how high is the ceiling next year with Romeo? I mean, to me, the ceiling, like how good could Indiana be, is Big Ten champion, Final Four. I mean, I think that makes, having Romeo and giving this Indiana roster a go-to scorer and a guy with that level of talent, I don't think you really have to squint to see that Indiana team winning a Big Ten title and making the Final Four. Now, we're talking ceiling, right? Expectation, like what would be reasonable, I think you're spot on, and you and I talked about this before. I think it would be reasonable to expect Indiana to finish in the top three or four in the Big Ten to make the NCAA tournament. And if you wanted to say, that an expectation with Romeo, and if everybody stays healthy, is to make the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, I don't know that I would disagree with that. I think certainly, just making the NCAA tournament would be a baseline expectation. So, the difference between kind of, what's your standard, like what would be considered success, and then what's the ceiling, are two different things. But I think when you add a guy with Romeo's talent, if Juwan Morgan comes back, and now you go into most games that you play having the best twosome, and in a lot of those games maybe even having the two best players on the court, that means that you should win a lot of basketball games. And, again, part of that will be part of Indiana's ability to live up to that will be, who steps up and takes the reins at point guard. Are Devontae or Robert Phinisee ready to be consistent? Is Deron Davis healthy? Is there consistent play from one of the young big men? Who do they get as a grad transfer? Does a guy like Justin Smith take the next step? Like, there's all kinds of things that would go into Indiana fulfilling that ceiling. But I think that comes into play in terms of the top line, for what you could see as reasonable if Romeo comes.
I agree with just about everything you said. That's kind of why I said some reasonable, some unreasonable. I don't know that it's ever fair to, a ceiling, I think it's fair to say could be the Final Four, but it's hard to ever expect that. We've seen so many different examples of really great teams. You don't have to look back very far to see Virginia this year was the best team in college basketball all season, lost in the first round of the tournament. So I think the ceiling is a great season, and then you see what happens in the tournament.
Well, yeah, look at 2002, for example. Like, what was the ceiling for that team? The ceiling for that team was making a Final Four, which they did. Now, a lot of things had to go right for that to happen. And if you play that season out 1,000 times, most of the time, they probably lose in the Sweet 16 to Duke, because, obviously that comeback was absolutely epic. And then the tournament opened up. But they had the players and the talent to be able to possibly make that run and to get a high enough seed to do that. So that's where I think, you know, when you look at the ceiling, could this team, you know, get themselves a decent seed, make the NCAA tournament first, get a decent seed, and then have the talent and maybe the ability to play in some different ways to be able to make a run. And I think you could see that then. Yeah. I mean, it's all about health and, you know, how many, you know, do all the guys gel, do things fall the right way? So I agree with you. Big difference between kind of the expectation, what the standard would be for success and what the ceiling is. But that's what makes this decision so interesting and so much fun, is because so much will change, you know, depending on what he says on Monday. So let me ask you this then. This comes from Madros in the Inside the Hall forum. Assuming Romeo is a one-and-done player, and I think most people expect that that would be the case, and assuming that he chooses Indiana, what impact will he have on the Indiana program in the 2019-2020 season and beyond? So beyond this one season that he would play, assuming that we'll be better off for having had him, can you articulate the reasons why this would be so, beyond just the impact that he'll have on that he would have on the court next year?
Well, I think we kind of saw this with Cody Zeller, even though he was a 2-year player. He really kind of got the ball rolling for recruiting. Now, some of those guys that followed in his footsteps didn't necessarily pan out the way everyone thought they would when they committed. But if you look at the run that Indiana went on recruiting wise, at least from a commitment perspective and where some of those guys were ranked in the aftermath of Zeller, I think he kind of got the ball rolling. I think you could see the potential for something similar happening with Langford. I mean, you have an opportunity to grab a nationally ranked top five recruit from your backyard, essentially at least your home state. I think it can only have a positive impact on future recruiting, because there's other guys in the 2019 class, speaking specifically guys like Trace Jackson Davis and Keon Brooks, who you really like to have, and they see a guy like Romeo Langford going to Indiana, and I think it gives them a little bit of pause, and it makes them think a little bit harder about going to Indiana as well. So I do think he's a one and done player. So in terms of his on court impact, I'm not sure that you can really count on anything beyond one season, but I do think he could have a pretty significant impact in terms of just getting the ball rolling. Not that Indiana coaching staff needs it, because they've done a really good job recruiting, but this would be obviously the first signature recruit of the Archie Miller era in terms of just being that top five star kind of kid. And I think he could really be the first domino in what could be a long line of five star highly ranked kids coming to Bloomington following Romeo.
On that note, this is from IU grad Mark. Do you anticipate any of the 2019 kids that we are pursuing committing early? Obviously, I think at this point, a lot of people who are following this, you know the names. Indiana's involved with a lot of five stars, like you mentioned, in the 2019 class, Keon Brooks and Trace Jackson Davis from in-state. Trendon Watford, obviously the brother of Christian Watford. Even Matt Hurt, a top five player from Minnesota. Indiana has been out to see him a lot. And then you've got a lot of guard prospects now coming on the radar. DJ Carton, who may end up, you know, becoming a five-star guy. Trey Mann, Jamius Ramsey. A lot of names that you're starting to see circulate that Indiana has interest in. So do you anticipate any of those guys committing early, or do you think there'll be longer recruiting processes with those guys?
Well, I guess it kind of depends on your definition of early. I don't think Keon Brooks is necessarily anywhere close to a decision. Trace Jackson Davis maybe could be the one that would have his timetable sped up. You know, I think he's talking about at least going into the fall, but who knows? Maybe Romeo committing would give him maybe a kind of a nudge to do the same thing. But you know, I've learned doing this now for 10 years, people always want predictions and people always want you to try to read the mind of a high school kid. It's really impossible to do. Information changes so frequently. Kids change their minds so often that until a kid says, hey, this is what I'm going to do in terms of making an announcement, or until they post it on Twitter, a lot of times you don't know what they're going to do. So, you know, I think it's possible that it could have a pretty, you know, quick Romeo committing could maybe help speed things up for some other guys, just because it, you know, it looks like Indiana is really going to get the ball rolling if that happens. But, you know, to put a timetable or say this kid's going to commit on this date, I mean, until they actually come out and say they're going to do something, I've kind of learned to stay away from making predictions on timetables, because here we are April 30th for Romeo Langford's decision. And most people probably thought he was going to originally, kind of the information was maybe he'll announce at McDonald's and then maybe shortly after the All-Star games. And now it's going to the end of April. So, you know, it's I know everyone wants to predictions and to know how things are going to work out, but that's just not how it works, at least in the environment that we're in right now.
All right, let's talk about some guys that we already know are going to be on Indiana's roster for next year. And Tom Jamison wants to know, who do you see as making big jumps this year? He says he's thinking Justin and Devontae for two. Can you name your top three guys that'll make big jumps this season?
I would say Justin Smith's on my list. Wow, this is a tough question. I don't know if it qualifies as a jump because he didn't play last year. I think Race Thompson is going to make a pretty big impact because of, you know, the experience that he has now and the fact that he's going to be more healthy. Those two guys stand out immediately. I think Al Durham's going to be a lot better next season. I think he really kind of got his feet wet early on. Didn't shoot the ball as well as maybe he's capable of. I think if he can work on his perimeter game, just become a solid three-point shooter, I think defensively he's a guy that can help a lot. You know, obviously if Romeo comes, his role may not be as big as some other guys, but I think he's going to be a guy that you'll see make a pretty big leap. But the name that stands out the most to me at this point, I think, is Justin Smith. I just think he showed a lot of potential. And I know just from talking to people that he's really excited about this offseason and hungry to get back in the gym and hungry to improve his game. So he's one guy that I've definitely got circled with a red pin on my list.
Yeah, I think Justin Smith would be on everybody's list. You mentioned Race, and I was thinking about him too, but it's hard to qualify whatever he does as a jump because, you know, we just haven't seen that much from him yet. I think Devontae is going to be really interesting because my instinct is to put him on that list, and yet we've seen so many ups and downs from him that it's hard to kind of have faith in that. But, you know, there's a part of me that really thinks, you know, he went into his first two seasons where it was almost like, you know, what you got from him is a bonus. It's not like he was slated to be a starter. It's not like he was an upperclassman or expected to do things. And now he enters this season as a junior, as the guy that you pencil in as a starter, you know, with some of those expectations. And I just wonder, maybe it's more of a hope than a wonder, that will lead to some maturity. And if he can add some maturity and add, you know, some consistency to, you know, the spectacular skill that he has and that he's displayed at times, that's going to be big. And maybe having a guy like Robert Phinisee, that so many people see as the next point guard at Indiana, you know, to kind of push him and motivate him to do that, to where now it's not him just trying to, you know, get the starting spot from someone else, but it's his and someone's trying to steal it. I just wonder if that mentality for Devontae will be helpful for him, you know, kind of given what we know of his mindset. And I have no idea, but I guess I'm kind of pinning my hopes there. And I think he's such an important piece for next year's team. That's why I'm hoping. And the other guy, and this goes into a question that we got from Hoosier 2303, do you see Clifton Moore ever getting playing time on the team last year that was lacking depth down low? He didn't get time. Now we only added more depth. Is he the next Tim Priller? And I wanted to answer that just to immediately get that notion out of the way, that he's the next Tim Priller. Tim Priller, you know, great guy, should not have gotten a scholarship to Indiana University. Clifton Moore is a tantalizingly talented player. Like, he's got skill. He's got things that he can do. For him, it seems to be about comfort level on the court, getting used to the speed of the game, understanding, you know, what he needs to do defensively, having that defensive awareness. But I also would expect him to make a jump. Part of that is because the bar is so low given what he produced last year. But I have to think that he'll start getting some more minutes this year. He'll be a leg up on some of the other young guys because he's had time in the system. You know, we don't know what to expect from Deron Davis coming back from injury. And we know that there are skills there. And if he's more comfortable, then maybe that allows some of those skills to come to the surface. So he's the other guy that I think not a lot of people are talking about. In fact, most people were talking about him more as like, hey, you know, is this a guy who could transfer because he didn't play very much? Well, he clearly seems committed to the IU program. You know, you see videos of him working out. And I think for him to kind of have that mindset after what had to be a disappointing season for him kind of tells me a little something about his mindset that I like. And so I think if you know, if that's how he's attacking this offseason, I think he could be a guy that surprises after, you know, one season after he disappointed, when to be fair, maybe expectations were a little bit high for him coming into the year.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear the two things that he really needs to work on this offseason if he wants to play more. One is getting stronger, and that this is just my opinion, but looking at him and his build and his, you know, his frame, I think it's harder for him to put on weight or put on strength maybe than for other guys. He's just a lean looking guy who's lanky, and you know, sometimes it's harder to get weight on a guy like that. But he needs to be able to, if somebody pushes him, he needs to be able to push him back and move him out of the way. That's to me number one. Number two is just getting more confident in the speed of the game and his surroundings. Every time he got out there, and it wasn't very often, he looked like he was reactive to everything. He was never the aggressor. He was almost like he was afraid to make a mistake, or he was afraid to do something wrong. And that's not how you play under, especially under Archie Miller, because if you're going in the game, he's expecting you to do something. You need to give him a reason to keep you in the game. Otherwise, you're coming out. You know, there was no, you know, his minutes were low because I don't think Archie Miller was really interested in just throwing him in there for the sake of it, right? He's trying to win games, trying to build his culture. And if you're not ready, you're not going to play. So I think the way that improves is playing against better guys in practice every day, becoming more confident in yourself, you know, getting reps, playing pickup, doing things, whatever you can do to get in the gym and become more confident in the speed of the game. It's a big jump going from where he was, you know, playing, which is in a smaller AAU program, you know, out in the Philadelphia area, didn't necessarily play on the Nike EYBL circuit or the Adidas Collins circuit. And it was different for him his first year in college. And big guys can take longer. But he does have a terrific shooting stroke, I feel like. And I think he's got, you know, some decent shot blocking instincts. Like I said, he's got to get stronger. But I think it's a huge summer for him, because if he's not going to make the jump now and be able to get more minutes by next season, I don't know when it's going to happen, because I think one thing I'm pretty confident about is more talent's coming to Bloomington, right? So Archie Miller and the coaching staff are going to go out and get players who are ready to play and are going to play his aggressive style of basketball. And, you know, it's either improve and get better, or someone's going to take your spot. And, you know, I think if he comes in this summer with the right mentality, the right mindset that, you know, there's an opportunity there, I got to grab it, I got to do these things. I'm sure the coaching staff's been honest with him, told him the things he needs to work on. I think he knows probably just from watching the games as closely as he did. You know, he was there. He saw what other guys were doing. He had a feeling of what it was like when he did get in there for a limited time. He should know what he has to get better at. So it's critical for him to make a jump now, because I think that, you know, like I said, I'm confident that there's going to be more talent coming in, and it's going to be harder and harder as the years go by to get minutes.
Well said. This is from SC Hoosier. Last year, Duran stayed the entire summer to work on his game. Do you know of anybody yet who is going to be doing that this summer? Have those decisions even been made yet, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, they have to be given an option, I believe, to go home at some point. I think there were several guys last summer who took the opportunity to take 2 or 3, 4 weeks off, go home for a little bit, spend time with family, see friends, do that kind of thing. You still work out on your own, but I think it's up to the individual what they want to do. But, you know, I haven't heard any concrete plans, and I'm not sure that's something that's going to be announced or publicized anywhere. We'll see this summer when they start posting the videos of the freshmen getting there, who's in the videos and who's not, and we'll go from there. But I don't think it's something that they really publicize or make public, who's going to be there all summer and who's not. But for the most part, most guys are there for the majority of the summer, with the exception, you know, they do take some time off, a couple of them to go home and visit with family and friends. I think that's pretty normal operating procedure for every program around the country.
One other question from Tom, and this is about a guy who did stay last summer to work on his game a lot, Daron Davis. Any updates on his progress in rehab? And relatedly, and I'm tacking this on myself, how much do you think Daron's health changes Indiana's expectation/ceiling for next year?
No updates since he spoke in early February. You know, obviously seen him in a couple of the videos. I would assume that he's somewhat mobile by this point. He's, I think, over 3 months post-surgery. So I think the most common timetable that I've read and what he said in his early February comments was 6 to 9 months. And so I would think that they are going slow with him. There's no games for more than 6 more months. So you kind of let him progress naturally and don't try to push it. As far as his health, you know, it's interesting because in a lot of ways I thought Indiana was maybe a better team without Daron. And that's not a knock on Daron. I just thought the way they played a little bit later in the season was, particularly defensively, was they were better because they had more mobile guys out there who were able to, you know, obviously guard multiple positions. And with the defense being the way it is, you know, they don't switch anything. And so it's harder for a big guy who doesn't guard particularly well on the perimeter to play in a situation like that. So I think it's important that when he does come back, that he's a little bit more mobile. I know he lost some weight and was better for the most part this season. But, you know, I think with some of the guys they're bringing in, Race Thompson, Jake Forster, the number one thing that jumps out to me with those guys is, you know, they're athletic and they can move. They can guard. You know, there's a ball screen. They can, you know, they don't really cause you a huge matchup problem guarding that. And like a lot of times, teams are able to take advantage of Daron, and that's something I don't think that necessarily fits particularly well when you have kind of a weaker link in terms of moving around laterally. So I think if he's able to come back at 100% and he's going to be a guy that they can count on to score some in the post. But I'm also looking at it's a much more crowded situation now in the front court, and he's going to have to. It's not like he's going to have his spot handed to him. There's going to be guys that he's going to have to fight off for minutes, and I think that competition is going to be good for not just him but everybody on the roster.
So now let's move on to some questions about Archie Miller, and I'm going to combine a couple questions into one here. This is from Sheldog, IU, and Candy Stripes. Can you discuss Archie Miller's recruiting grade so far in his short term at IU, and how would you compare the recruiting styles of Archie and Tom Crean to each other? And I think what's interesting about the second part of that question, and you alluded to it a little bit earlier, is, you know, we may not have enough information yet to really make an accurate comparison, because when Tom Crean first came in, you know, obviously, you know, we've talked about kind of the recruiting troubles that he had toward the end of his tenure, especially in-state. But when he first got to Indiana, you know, he inked that really good class, you know, with Maurice Creek and Christian Watford and Jordan Hulls. And then, you know, there's a bevy of in-state guys, Cody Zeller, Yogi Farrell, obviously the rest of Yogi Farrell's class. And then, you know, you initially got the commitment from Trey Lyles, and that ended up not happening. But then James Blackman Jr. and Colin Hartman and some other in-state guys. And then that well kind of went dry. And that, you know, took some time to kind of see play out. So it may not be totally fair yet to make a comparison between the two. But I think it would be interesting to at least get your sense of how their styles are similar and how they're different.
Well, from following it on a day-to-day basis and seeing the offers and kind of who they're looking at, I think there seems to be a little less, a lot less impulse from the new staff in terms of who they're offering and who they're targeting. And it, you know, it doesn't seem like it seemed like under Crean that new names would just pop up like every day. Like it was like all of a sudden they're watching this guy and all of a sudden they're offering this guy. Whereas with 2019, I mean, I don't know if there's more than seven or eight kids that have been offered at this point, whereas in previous years it would have been, you know, 20 or 25 at this point. And it was harder to kind of narrow down who they were really looking at. It was kind of like cast a really wide net and then catch a few fish, whereas this seems a little bit more organized and a little bit more honed in on who they want to go. Now, I'm sure they're going to offer some more 2019 kids as the spring moves along. And, you know, that's fine and natural, but, you know, I think they're being a little bit more diligent and just kind of the vetting process on who they offer. It seems like there's a lot that goes into that. So that was one difference.
But was it like that with Crean in the beginning too? I don't recall back then.
Yeah. I mean, that first couple of classes, it was just like, you know, that, you know, the very first class was, remember, Verdell Jones and Nick Williams and Malik Story and Tijon and a couple, you know, I think that was more or less that's not really a fair time to kind of assess anything, because it's like, hey, you're trying to put together a roster for your first season. Let's just get some bodies in here. You know, and that's not a critique of Crean. I think he did some really good things recruiting. He got a McDonald's All-American 5 straight years, but it just seemed like there was just some guys that like he would miss on. And then all of a sudden it was like, well, we didn't get this guy, so we have to get somebody that position. So let's just offer so and so, and that kind of leads to, you know, the situations like a Max Holtzel, or, you know, Max Holtzel was, you know, a decent player, but like he's not somebody that you see once in an open gym and you offer. You know, it's like, you know, I don't feel like this staff would be offering kids that are, you know, that kind of under the radar. And, you know, and there were some hits, obviously, but like an OG and an OB, obviously, and obviously the Victor Oladipo, the whole narrative behind that is like
kind one scholarship of out offer, of proportion. Alex.
Right. I mean, he had like 10 or 15 offers. So if we're being honest, he didn't have one scholarship offer. And I think that gets blown out of proportion. You know, I just see a little bit, a lot more reserve in terms of just, the approach, and it's just not kind of throwing things out there. In terms of a grade for Archie, I mean, I think he's done a really good job. I mean, the first class he's got right now is ranked, I think, 21st or 22nd. If he gets Romeo, it goes into the top 10. I mean, that's really good. I mean, obviously you have to do it over a sustained period. You have to string these together. You know, that's the other thing that's kind of a wait and see on how he'll do. You know, Crean, it was, you know, he'd have a really good class and you'd have some guys, and then there'd be a year where, you know, he just didn't get anything. And that's why you kind of see the imbalance of the roster, because it was like one year you get two or three guys, and then all of a sudden you got to get six guys because guys waiting for the NBA. I think there's going to be a little bit more balance. Now, I can't say that for sure because we haven't seen multiple levels of what Archie Miller is going to do. But to me, I think the number one thing you have to do in recruiting, if you're not going to get one and dones every year, you have to get at least two or three guys in every class that are going to stay multiple years and grow in your program. You can't recruit five players and then have four of them transfer out after the first year. You look at the end of Thad Matta's tenure at Ohio State, people will point to different things, but that one recruiting class that he had with Jaquan Lyle and Daniel Giddens and Austin Grandstaff, and I think Mickey Mitchell was another one, and I forget the other kid. It was like a top 10 class, right? And like four of them left after 1 year. And that was the beginning of the end for him. So you gotta, you know, it's one thing to get a kid, but you gotta get the right fits. And I think that's one thing. I think we'll see more consistency with what Archie Miller does recruiting wise, just because there's a little bit better job of vetting everyone that you offer. Because even if you get a top 10 kid, if they're not the right fit, it's not gonna work, and they're gonna leave.
Yep. Okay, this is from CW76. Thoughts on Coach Marshall, Cliff Marshall, Indiana's strength and conditioning coach. It's not called strength and conditioning, though. What's his actual title?
He's the director of athletic performance.
Yeah, that's right. Any workouts that stand out or that you find interesting? I will say, it was either today or yesterday, you retweeted this, a video of the guys doing yoga. and Cliff Marshall actually retweeted it and said, work hard, recover hard. I think Al was in there, Justin was in there, Clifton was in there, maybe a couple of other guys doing a hot yoga session. It was like 102 degrees. So we've seen that. We saw the one workout where the guys were dribbling, I think, and then there were like some colored I don't know, the best thing to, like, panels for them to hit when I guess a color was called out. So kind of, testing their reaction time and focus. So you're seeing kind of some unique training methods that Cliff is bringing in. And everything that I hear is really positive about him as a person and just, what he's, kind of what he's putting these guys through and how they're developing. What are your thoughts on him and anything standing out to you besides, kind of some of those unique workouts that we're seeing pop up on social media?
The main thing that stands out to me is he seems to be really well liked by everybody. I've met him a couple of times, talked to him, at various events, just a very friendly, outgoing, genuine person when you talk to him. And I think that's important because he, as much as anybody else, spends the most time with the players because he works with them in the off season, and they need to trust him. They need to be able to look at him and say, this is a guy that's on my side. This is a guy that's going to push me, but he's going to help me. And I think overall that he's done a really good job. And obviously I'm not in workouts and I don't see a lot behind the scenes, but from everyone I've talked to, they really like him and players seem to like him. And I think, we'll see after the end of the summer. I mean, he's already shared some pictures of some early offseason progress. I mean, Al Durham looks a lot different already than he did at the end of the season. And so does Race Thompson from the time he got to campus and to what he looks like now. So hopefully we continue to see those type of success stories. And he's, to me, seems like a guy who's always thinking outside the box, wanting to learn, well respected by his peers. You see some stuff on social media where he goes and speaks to different events and things like that. He's obviously trained a ton of NFL players and has a really good background. So I think he's somebody that Indiana fans should be excited about.
I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like in some of the articles that I've seen with guys, recapping recruiting visits or, kind of talking about the pitch that Indiana's making to them, I feel like a lot of them mention Cliff Marshall and, kind of the workout program and the player development, not just from a skill standpoint, but also just physically. And I don't feel like I remember that happening as much before. Is that fair?
I remember it happening with Janae quite a bit. I don't remember it as much with Lionel. And again, I wasn't really behind the scenes with any of these guys to see. But I thought Janae Jackson was a really good strength and conditioning coach. He was a guy that it was tough for them to lose. Lionel, don't know much about him. I just know that it always seemed like people were making comments about some of the stuff he did on Twitter, social media, just for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But he seemed to be well liked too. But I agree with you. I think with Cliff Marshall, I don't want to compare salaries or anything. I just think they went and got somebody that's a little bit more proven. This is somebody that's been training professional athletes.
AJ Green, so, Luke Kuechly.
Right. So, you're going to, I think the guy's a professional, and I'm not saying any of the previous guys were not professionals, but I mean, that's something that I would be selling if I was the coaching staff on a visit. So maybe that's something that they're selling more in the recruiting pitch and guys are picking up on that because, all these recruiting interviews, when we talk to a kid and we say, you went on a visit, what stood out to you? What's going to pop into their mind in most cases, it's going to be whatever the coaching staff made a focus. So if it was talking about the IU guys in the NBA, then they're probably going to talk about that. But if they spent an hour with Cliff Marshall and they learned things from Cliff Marshall and they really liked Cliff Marshall, then they're going to bring that up. So I think it's good if you have an asset like that in your program to bring it up and sell it and say, this is a guy that's, he's trained NFL players. I mean, he's going to work with your son every day and he's going to make him a better athlete. And this is kind of the gains that we can point to that certain guys have made. And this is the plan we have. I mean, I think that's great that you incorporate that in your recruiting pitch because not everybody does.
All right. Let's close with a couple more questions. One real quick, this wasn't submitted, but I just want to ask you the recent gift that was announced about the IU locker room renovations, big deal. Or just something to make note of?
Well, I will say Yeah, I think Matt Dennison asked me this maybe last week on the radio show. We talked about this a little bit. I think it's all this with all this stuff, it's basically an arms race, right? Because if you don't have a state-of-the-art locker room and X, Y, and Z that recruiting against do, then they're going to say, well, what do they have over there? You know, it's like when they built Cook Hall. Cook Hall was probably the nicest practice facility in the country for 6 months or a year until somebody else built a better one, right? You're always having to improve, and you're always having to kind of do something to set yourself apart. And in a lot of ways, these top of the line programs that invest the most money in themselves and recruit at the highest level, they're always doing things to set themselves apart. You know, this off season, it might be a locker room. Next season, it might be this is not things that I know are in the works. This is just examples. You know, they've already done a lot last season to upgrade the weight room for the basketball program. And that was one thing Cliff Marshall came in and totally redid. Maybe next off season, it's, you know, an improved players lounge area or
players only dorm,
you know, whatever, all these things that people want to talk about. But I mean, this is how you get players in a lot of ways. I mean, you want to have a state-of-the-art facility for your games. You want to have a state-of-the-art facility for your practices. You want to have a state-of-art locker room. You want to have a state-of-the-art academic center. You want to have, you know, great living quarters. You want to have people that can prepare food. You want to have academic support. You want to have a coaching staff. You want to have, you know, all these things, right? So you're constantly upgrading, because if you're not, Kentucky is. If Kentucky's not, Kansas is. Michigan's all these programs. So I think it's significant from the standpoint of, if it was outdated and needed to be fixed, then they're fixing it, right? So it's kind of a thing you check off the list. But, you know, the list is never checked off in ink, right? You're checking it off with a pencil. And then 3 or 4 years down the line, when Michigan State upgrades theirs or Michigan does something, you're saying, oh, erase that. We got to do something better. That's just the reality of the situation. So I think it's good that they're doing it, but you're never a finished product. It's just like, you know, Jared, you're not a finished product as a podcast host, right? You're always doing things to try to make yourself better. Improve yourself. It's the same thing here. You're always trying to get better. And I think that's what they're doing with this. Well, I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, do you agree with me on that?
Oh, I totally agree. It was my banner moment on last week's show, because I think it's a huge, I mean, it's another step toward Indiana being right up there, you know, not just in legend with the other blue bloods, but actually in the present with the other blue bloods, because they're, you know, I've never been in the locker room, but just from what I've heard, you know, it needed some renovations. And I think you're right. It can be used as a, you know, negative recruiting by other people. And maybe it's, you know, it's kind of a small thing. I don't think it's going to swing anybody's decision, but those little things can add up. And I'll tell you what, even more so than what it can do for recruiting, I think those kind of things can have subtle and maybe even not so subtle impacts on just your pride in playing for Indiana on a day-to-day basis. You know, when you walk in and it's this state-of-the-art, you know, locker room, and everything is nice and everything is, you know, is just tip-top shape, you know, as coaches and as players, it's like a little just subtle subliminal daily reminder, like, hey, there is a standard to live up to here. Like, this is important. You know, no expense was spared, you know, to provide everything. And that means no effort should be, you know, should be spared, you know, to live up to what the expectation is.
And right, I think you have more ownership, right?
Yeah,
in it, because like, wow, I've never seen anything like this. I mean, I'm going to go out and I'm not saying that they don't play hard or they don't care, but it's like, it makes them want to do even more for the program. And that's what this is all about, is putting together a team that can win games and that the school can be proud of. And that, you know, you're ultimately trying to help these guys reach their dreams, right? There's going to be a certain set of these guys that are going to go in the NBA. There's going to be some that go play overseas. And there's going to be other guys that don't play basketball beyond college, but they're going to go on and do other things in life, and they're going to be representatives of the university. So why not take care of them while they're there as best as you can, right?
Agreed. Agree wholeheartedly. So when will the donation come in for the state-of-the-art media lounge? Are you waiting for that?
Well, they already redid the media room, and if you haven't, you've been in there, Jared, right?
I've been in there.
You know, we used to be cramped in the desks, right? I think that was probably a Bob Knight thing, whereas like, mm-hmm. don't give these guys a nice place to sit. Give them a desk, you know, make it as hard as they, make it as hard for them as possible.
They're just above prostitutes
and all that stuff. Exactly. I heard he used to not feed them. I think my dad's told me that there used to not be a media meal. It was like, make them go buy something from the concession stand. But now it's not like that. I mean, they take care of the media really well at IU, and the media room's great. So no upgrade needed. We're doing well, and it's exciting times covering IU basketball. I think you can agree with that.
It is exciting times. Okay, last question, and this really isn't fair because this question could probably take us an entire episode, and it's probably something that we'll bring some guests on to discuss here in future episodes of Podcast on the Brink, but maybe just some quick hit thoughts. This comes from Luby1013 in the Inside the Hall Premium Forum. Which, by the way, if you're listening to this and you're not a member of the Inside the Hall Premium Forum, you really should. What is it per year, Alex? $35?
$34.95.
It's 35 of the best dollars that you will spend as an IU fan this year. I'm in there. I love going in there. I actually don't post as much as I just go in there and read. But I love the perspectives that everybody gives. So if you haven't done that, now is obviously a great time to do it because you can get in on, Alex, what I believe is the biggest or soon to be biggest thread in the history of the forum, the Romeo Langford mega thread, which is going on, what, like 6 million views or?
No, it's 264,000 views, 5,361 posts. So, and we still got 6 days to go. So we'll see how that.
You might double it between now and Monday.
That's quite possible.
But anyway, go join the forum. But here's the question. What do you see as the potential long-term impacts of the following few items in the next few years? The end of the one and done, should the NBA choose to pursue that, as has been rumored. The expansion and increased salaries of the G League and the increase in reclassification that we've seen in recent years. What do you kind of foresee? I mean, if anything, maybe it's too early to tell on some of this stuff, but what's kind of your sense on what's coming for college basketball?
Wow, this could be an episode. One and done. I think it only, you know, if they get rid of it and let players go straight to the NBA, I think it only affects what, 10 or 15 guys a year at the most. So it's just, you know, maybe instead of starting to recruit at the number one spot, you start recruiting at the number 16 spot in the rankings. So I think that's really the only impact. Now, if they change it to where you have to stay in school for a certain number of years, if you do come, now that can obviously change how you recruit, because you may be less likely to get a certain kid if you have a guy that's locked in for 2 years at the same position. If you get an elite point guard, another elite point guard may not want to come and play behind that guy for a year or something like that. But as far as the G League goes, I think it's a positive thing that they're making it more viable, because my whole thing on the NBA and guys leaving, I'm for letting guys go straight out of high school if they think that's the best decision for them. And I'm also for, if they can't go straight to the NBA but they don't want to go to college, then give them an alternative of something that they can do that's you know, enough to have a living, make a living on, at least on a temporary basis. You know, I don't think the G League should be the goal for anybody. You know, I think it's obviously a minor league system for the NBA to kind of develop guys and eventually bring them up to the pro ranks. But anything you can do, you know, if a kid doesn't want to go to college, they shouldn't be forced to go to college. And, you know, if they don't have a direct path to the NBA, but they still don't want to go to school, I think it's great that they're making the G League a more attractive option. So I don't, you know, I'm not one of those people that thinks, man, this is really going to hurt college basketball if they get rid of the one and done, or they make all these rule changes. I don't necessarily think it's going to kill the product. I don't really have a problem necessarily with the way it is now if they wanted to keep it that way, but I think they should let people make the decision they feel is best for them. And in a lot of cases, you know, if we had LeBron James come along in 2018 and he was forced to go to college for a year, I mean, I think we can all agree that would be a little bit ridiculous. So
yeah,
I think it's healthy that they're having these discussions. I'm a little bit skeptical as to what this committee that they've formed is going to actually come up with, if the solutions are going to be anything that are viable or actually helps for the positive. But I'm willing to at least listen and hear what they have to say, and then if I don't like it, I'll start criticizing them on Twitter. So there we go.
Do you think that we'll also continue to see kids reclassifying and get a lot of, you know, 17-year-old freshmen in college?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously up to the situation. I think the more typical reclassification thing is a kid that's already held back, you know, and they can go ahead and have the legwork in to do it. But it seems like now they've made it so easy to take online classes in the summer. It's almost like anybody, if they really wanted to reclassify and come to school early, they could do it. But I remember going, you know, I know a lot of these kids just want to get there as quickly as they can because of the money. But if I was 17 years old, I don't necessarily think I'd want to go to college right then. I mean, you know, it's fine to go when you're 18 or when you're really supposed to go, but moving it, trying to go up just so you can get to the NBA 1 year earlier and maybe be there when you're 19 instead of when you're 20. I mean, you're giving away precious years of your life. I mean, those are times you're never going to get back. And in a lot of ways, I'm not for it. But like I said, everyone's, you know, entitled to make their own decisions. I think they should have the freedom to do that. And if guys want to reclassify and it's within the rules, and I think they should be able to do that.
I agree. All right, Alex, this was a good chat. Thanks for coming on, asking or answering these questions. Thank you to everybody who submitted questions. I think you and I talked about this. We'll probably try and do some more mailbags throughout the off season. It's good, you know, probably every 4 or 5 weeks just to get a gauge for what the people who listen to the show want us to talk about and just answer questions and kind of mix this in with some of the interviews and then, you know, some of the other off-season analysis that we'll do. My hunch is that next week's episode will have something to do with Monday's decision, I would think. And then,
yes.
and then maybe in the episodes beyond, we'll be able to start spreading our wings and moving beyond talking about Romeo, but it'll certainly warrant the majority of the conversation, I think, for at least one more week, depending on what he does on Monday, which will essentially set the trajectory for the rest of the off-season conversations and for what will happen next season. So it's an important day, to say the
least. Should be a lot of fun. One thing I'll say is if you're following the announcement, whether it be on social media, whether it be in a live stream, whether it be in person, regardless of what happens, just take a deep breath and remember that this kid has earned his moment you know, give him the respect that he deserves, regardless of what he does. You know, I'm not saying that as a to throw water on anybody's hopes.
You're scaring everybody right now, Alex.
No. I'm saying this. I've said this for a long time. But as you know, Jared, this recruitment hits a little bit closer to home than most just based on the fact that I'm from New Albany and I've heard about this kid since he's in fourth grade. And I just hope that everyone is cordial to him regardless, you know, of what happens. And that goes for, you know, if he picks Indiana, Kansas fans, Vanderbilt fans don't need to be saying stuff to him on social media and all that. I know that you're always going to have your rotten eggs that do that type of stuff. But I would just say, especially in this instance, just to see how this kid has handled everything and just to watch, he's the media all season, the autograph, just everything. It's been crazy to watch him handle this with such humility and class throughout the year. So I obviously hope for Indiana fans' sake that it's a favorable outcome for them, and we'll see what happens. But I just hope that everybody is respectful of whatever decision he does make. So
I agree. And we'll if you want to talk about the decision after it happens, we're going to host a live show after the announcement over on the Assembly Call. So we'll be going live Periscope, YouTube, and Facebook.
You're assuming that he doesn't break the internet, though, right?
Well, he may. If there's any problem with the live stream, you can blame that. There may not be enough bandwidth.
Exactly.
but I'm hoping, since I'm out in Dallas, you know, since I'm far away from Indiana, that we'll have some connectivity there. Maybe
I can go ahead and predict the number one United States trend on Twitter come Monday night about 7 o'clock, and I think it's going to be Romeo Langford.
No question about it. No question. But yeah, we're gonna talk about it. So if you follow Assembly Call on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, we'll be going live on all of those platforms. So we can talk about it, whatever he does. Hopefully it's for Indiana, but we will see. And then we'll be back to talk about it next week on another brand new edition of Podcast on the Brink. Until then, take care. Thank you for listening to this episode of Podcast on the Brink. We always appreciate you being here. To get more from me and from Alex, visit assemblycall.com and insidethehall.com for complete coverage of Indiana University basketball. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or family member who loves IU basketball as much as you do. You can also support the show by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, which helps us get the word out to more IU fans like yourself. We will be back next week with a new episode. Until then, as always, go Hoosiers.